You are listening to BensTorah.com.
We're getting into a very interesting topic. And the reason I'm doing this topic tonight is for a couple of reasons. Number one is the Sechtes Nozir was so full of sugyas dealing with Tumah and Kalanim and Zirim that for me not to deal with that topic because of it would be mamish something, you know, ignoring the obvious. So therefore, I'm going to spend a lot of time tonight on this sugya, and you'll see some of the sugyas we did in the Nozir come alive based upon tonight's analysis. Number two, the practical application of the halachis of Tumas Kohanim has so many different types of applications. Sometimes we have Tamid Chacham, like we have here tonight, that are Tamid Chacham, and they're Kohanim, so therefore they already have a familiarity. But the fact of the matter is that many Kohanim have no clue concerning some of what I'm going to be discussing tonight. So to put this on the record and perhaps to be mafarsim into the internet and other places, we're going to make the shiur tonight as inclusive as possible. I don't want to unduly delay the shiur, so everybody get the Maror Mekanos. Let me just start off with the Psukim and Pashas Emor that I'm going to get to tonight's shiur. In the beginning of Pashas Emor, you have Hashem addressing Moshe, Emola Kohanim, tell the Kohanim b'nei Aaron, Amata le'im le'nefesh le'tava b'yamav. The first halacha that the Baruch Hashem mentions when it comes to Kohanim is the Isa to Metame Lanesin, Kim L'Sher HaKorav Elav. The only people that they could be Metame to are people who are intimately related to them. If they die, these relatives therefore cause the Kohen B'derech Chiyuv to metamik them, especially if he's going to be involved in the kfura, le'ima, le'aviv, le'vino, le'vito, le'achiv, and le'achos, ha'psula, krovilav, ha'shalahayis, le'ish, le'yitamo. These are the shiva krovim that a kohen is mechuyiv to metamik himself to participate in their levayos, in their kfura, etc., etc. And then the Torah goes into discussing other things that relate to a kohen, which are not nogeya to tonight's shir itself. Now, based upon this, if you look in the Maror Mekanos I have in front of you, the photostat is coming from the Sefer Geshar Chaim, from the Tukhachinsky, which is looked upon as the major treatise on Hilchos Avelos. Everything else that was created later on in our generation, whether it's the Art Scroll or the Kabbalah, everything is based upon Tukhachinsky, the Art Scrolls. I mean, so it's all based upon him. And what he did is he took Hilchos Avelos and made it into a Litva Shalomdis. You know, that's what he did. So the first halach you have on page number one is the basic concept that Tumah Sunes perhaps is the most chomer Tumah that we have on the face of this earth. It reaches a level of Avi Avisa Tumah. And the question is, how are you Metami from a mess? So the three mechanisms we learned in the Gemara Nazir is by Maga, by touching it, by Hesed, by moving it indirectly, being an oil hames. This shows you the uniqueness and the distinctiveness of this specific type of tumah. And halach lamasa, that's the halacha. With lava, with an nefesh l'tabav amav, is a lava of the Torah that, in fact, is the east of the rice I just mentioned in Pashas Emor. He then mentions that not only adults, not only full-fledged human beings, but even a baby that is miscarried, the nefel, as long as the baby had gestated for 41 days plus, the ultimate result is that nafel, when it undergoes abortion or miscarriage, is metame betumas mes in all the halach ramifications we have today. But it has to be 41 days old, because 40 and less, it's mayim ba'amah. The Mishnah Melech accentuates that in the Rambam when he discusses the concept of nafel. And then the question is, not only a full body is metame, if you look at halach abez, the concept of gzayis and mes, this is the Gemara we have in Maseches Nozir discussing the Mishnah Maseches Olos that delineates all the things that are metame tumas mes for non-nazirim, and he just gives a list over on page number two. Eivim and mes, eivim and achai, a neighbor has to have a combination of basa, gidim, and atzamais, those are the things that make an eivir, shidu gogoles, revias hadam, Kavat Samais, all of this Amatami Bamagamasa Uba Ohel. Now, what I want to mention over here is something quite interesting. Look at Halacha Gimel. We're coming to the first shayla of tonight's shir. A Kohen needs a surgery. And Ava has to be amputated. And the fact of the matter is, Ava Menachai is Matame to Mismes. So this Kohen has to be in the hospital. He's going to have Rachman Litzlan and Ava being amputated. As soon as the Ava is taken off Ava Menachai, it generates to Mismes. So the Kohen is not in the position to jump out of the bed and run out of the hospital over there. So the way that Rav Tkachinsky formulates it, he says the following, Halacha Dalit, Kedarish l'nituach Eiver, V'yad shenechtach mena Eiver, Yamar lehotzi Eiver mena bayis, Shebosheich HaKohen, you take the Eiver out to a different room to get it away, to diminish what obviously the exposure to Tum, you have no choice of it, because if you had that type of activity, it's a pekuach nefesh. But you don't just keep on being metami, we don't have to, so you get him out of that specific situation. Which now brings us to an interesting question that the Mechaber deals with over here. The concept of a Kohen who is a Rofe. So let's say, for instance, the Kohen didn't ask any Shailas, he didn't ask Rav Moshe. I have in front of me a tshuva I didn't print out for you tonight, but it's a very funny tshuva in which Rav Moshe was asked a question by Rabbi Schwab, those who are part of the Yekdusha community. I should take note, it was Rav Shimon Schwab that asked Rav Moshe a simple question, can Kohenim become doctors? And the history of this tshuva, and he says it in the beginning, the first third of the tshuva, Rav Moshe says, is initially I wasn't going to even bother answering this question. It is so obviously prohibited in the halachic, hashkafic world of Gedol Yisrael, they never paskin the heter over here, and therefore he wanted to ignore the shayla entirely. But he says, since Rav Schwab is one of the Gedolim, and in Sarvan the Gadol, and since I see you're adamant, because I guess he had in Broyas some Kohenim who wanted to become doctors, I just can't leave you destitute over here, therefore I'm going to answer the question. So what Rav Moshe says in this tshuva is the following. He says, first of all, number one, he says there is unquestionably a minhag of Klal Yisrael throughout the ages that under normal conditions, Kohenim, who were halachically sensitive, did not become doctors. That, he claims, is a tradition. Number two, if you will point to me that there are lists of Kohenim, doctors, who happen to also be Talmidei Chachamim, so the question is, how did they come where they were doing to do what they basically did? How do we comprehend this? So Rav Moshe has a very interesting line when it comes to this. He says, let's be very pragmatic. What was medical education in the Tekufas HaRishayna? What medical schools did they go to? What anatomical dissection did they do? Because there wasn't such a thing as anatomical dissection in the world of Christian Judaism until the 1700s. The only place in the universe they did initially anatomical dissection without a qualm was in China and those specific territories. That's why, in many respects, they had more knowledge of anatomy than the Judeo-Christian culture in Europe. So therefore, any Rishon that was a doctor in the 11, 1200s, and we have a lot of them, even if they're not Kohanim, they never really saw an anatomical dissection was going on. So therefore, they never had to go into such a situation to matame themselves. And number two, the concept of hospitals. How many hospitals existed? So therefore, the fact of being on call in a hospital, we have people dying continuously, was unheard of. So it is, ironically, it was very possible the only time to be exposed to a person who's dead if it's your patient and he died. But under normal circumstances, then the salience that doctors have in the education of medicine, and therefore being in a hospital in an environment where you have continual people dying, they weren't even exposed to it. So maybe in that situation, you know, whatever knowledge existed, you committed to memory, you had a mesaris from previous doctors, but they weren't exposed to the nesionis we have today. Today, this is impossible not to be exposed to Mason before you get your actual degree. So that's the first approach to explain history to what he just said, there's a midig nakta. But then he says, if you're going to quote me the Ravid, the Shitas Ravid, and the Ravid in your Mar Mekamas, Rabbi Yisai, is contained, I want you to look very carefully, the Ravid's contained in your Mar Mekamas on page number four in Halacha Bav on the right hand side of the page. This is a very famous Ravid that is misused. This Rav Tekhachitzi quotes the Ravid in the following format. He says, Poshet afilu kohen b'zman hazeh are mechuyavim with the love of the Isam and Tamil Mesim. Chalilu letzar of kula mishitas ha-Ravid. He quotes the Ravid from Hilchos Naziris. She b'zman hazeh, the Ravid says, She'afal she'hem akaponim tmei mesim. V'su lo chaloim halav. It's interpreted by many to hold that as manas that everybody's tamei mesim, there's no law really prohibiting kohen to matame today. So he says the following. This is Rav Tkachinsky's statement, and Rav Moshe follows in suit. Rav Tkachinsky says Rav Moshe says the same exact thing. Most posts, including the Rambam, disagreed with the Ravid. And furthermore, he brings down Degmar Rabba means the Noda Behuda, the Chassam Soy for saying their chuvis. Shagamhu. Lav, Ella Shalachiyav Halav, the Losase refers to the fact there is no longer a chiyav of punishment of the Lav, Avaluisa Shalteira Modug, which means their machala between the ability to flagate somebody for violating a Lav, to where there is a Lav being violated, but the flagation cannot be implemented. So he says very simply, Bizmanama Zesis, everybody's coming mess, and we can't get out of it. So it could be that what has happened today, even if according to Matamel and even Bemezid, Bahasra, we can't do any flagation according to the Shitas HaRavid. But when it comes to the Isa to do it, that the Ravid they interpret holds was never abrogated by the fact that everybody's tummy mess. To give you a dimium, if a person eats McDonald's 10 times a day, the fact that he ate it 5 times does not absolve him from eating it another 5 times the rest of the day. So the fact of the matter is, each time you eat a tummy, it's another mice and love that you're violating. If each one has a separate hasra, there's man based on the shaykhim, you get a separate chi of malchus. So therefore, this ravid, which is dismissed of never abrogating the culpability today, is accepted by Rav Poster and Moshe, quite obviously, in his tshuva said, don't throw the ravid in my way because the ravid ain't the source to permit this. And then he says, the only, there was a kuntras written by a certain chacha, which one of the members of Rav Schwab's kehila showed Rav Schwab. So Rav Schwab did not want to evaluate this specific kuntras, so he sent it to Rav Moshe for his opinion. So Rav Moshe says, initially I wasn't going to even bring it into my house. I wasn't even going to look at it. But since I see you're so adamant that you have to dama shetoshiv, I analyze it. And within a couple of minutes, what's fascinating, he says, is all the initial inhibitions that I had not being mocked or adopted to practice medicine, this Chacham quoted them. So if that's the case, so what was his sad heter to allow a doctor to practice medicine? So this you got to hear is Drake. This is the what was written in the Kuntras, which Rav Moshe literally was Decha Vishnei Yadayim. What the Kuntras says is, there's a mitzvah in Atayra, Allah Saman Adam Riacha. The mitzvah b'kolach nefesh, because nefesh is nochel kolach terukula. There's a mitzvah to merape people, mitzvah derais or api erape. And but we're dealing now with b'kolach nefesh. So this chacha wanted to say that since there's a mitzvah to be mitzvah people b'kolach nefesh, there's a chiv upon each and every one of us to learn medicine, to therefore be able to perform b'kolach nefesh when a person is deathly ill. So the mitzvah of all of us learning medicine to be able to mekayim lo samara damriecha, to mekayim hashev oisullah, arapi arapi. Therefore it's docha the iser of tumas hakohenim. So Zokht Rav Moshe with all due respect, he wants to compare it to a person saying, I got to become rich in order to be a big baal tzedakah. You know, he says, the fact is, the matter is, you know,
it's a hechsher.
What?
It's a hechsher. Yeah.
So he says that the pshat of the pasuk Hashem Vayisavah, and the Rambam himself teaches it up very beautifully. I'm surprised they don't quote it. The Rambam teaches it up in Masechtis Nedarim in his Peres LeMishnayis, that the mitzvah Hashem Vayisavah of Samar Adam Riacha means that you're supposed to help a person in Pekuach Nefesh depending upon your expertise. If you have medical knowledge, you're supposed to do your chachma to heal this person. If I don't have medical knowledge, but I have physical might to jump in and save them from drowning in the river or doing some other physical activity, I'm supposed to use my koyach, my energy, to mekayim those mitzvahs. And if I don't have the energy, I don't have the chachma, but I got a lot of money, and I can therefore hire other people to take care of the pekuach nefesh, but I'm not supposed to do such. But the Ramosha said there's no mitzvah deraisa for me to have to study medicine to become proficient in medical care for pekuach nefesh to save Jewish life. There's no mitzvah deraisa to do such. If you're a doctor and you have that knowledge, you have to practice it. And you're not allowed to. But to say there's a mitzvah deraisa which overrides the mitzvah of the Easter, Tumas Konim, to be able to do that, that's a pretty far-fetched svara. Ramosha says, with all due respect, I don't know where you got it from, but that surely doesn't exist in the world of halacha. And he dismisses it and basically throws it away. Now I know, and you know, some yichidei segula rabbanim that wanted to be matar. Shlomo Garin had his famous heter. Shlomo Garin's famous heter was based upon a kvetch that I showed my chevron when we were learning the daf yomi mesechtes noza. There was one daf that seemed to imply that kohenim are muzah b'tuma if they're not in a state of tuma. Let's say the Kohen is involved with Tumah, he's been ogei with Tumah. At that moment, the Mitami Yosef Nochemo, the Gemara seemed to imply there's no violation momentarily. Remember the deal. So therefore, what did Rav Koren suggest? That a person therefore wear a metal plate on his hand that touched a dead body, Cholok Echerev. So the plate therefore has a generation of Avi Avos Tumah. I'm wearing that now as a little thing on my, a little tchotchke on my arm continuously. So if I'm undergoing Tumas Ames from a metal plate that's Chalak Echerev, therefore applying that Gemara, there should be no Issa for Kohen to ever be a medical scope. That was his lumdis. I don't want to tell you what the rest of the Torah world said to respond to that. But the fact is that's one of the lumdis and somewhat the Pasma Shitas arrived. But by and large, I don't know today any of the Gedolim we all rely upon that was mocked to that, so therefore Moshe dismissed it. Now.
Yeah.
Some based it upon the Raivad.
What is the Easter? There's no lav.
No, he doesn't say there's no lav. He says the lav is now punishable with malchus, but the Easter of the lav is still in place. That's what the Raivad said. The way the Raivad is interpreted. The way the Raivad is interpreted.
The Raivad says there's no lav.
I understand. So the Gedolim of Gur Gedula Olam, you mentioned the names. When they dealt with that, said either the rabbi is a misprint, it's impossible. What? I understand you. So what they're saying, either it's a misprint. So there's no, what they're saying is you can't abrogate the Issa by the fact you can't be Matar yourself. Where did the Issa go, Tzvi, if the person can't be Matar himself? You can write a lot out of the Torah.
Maybe you have to be Moisir.
No, absolutely not. Doesn't exist. Doesn't exist.
How about Hatzalah?
Wow.
Guys who work in Hatzalah, they might come across, either going to go to the hospital, or they might have...
They have a code. They have a code to tell them. They have a code to tell them not to come.
Yeah. Wow. They have a code. They have a warning system for calling in. But I'm not going to get into that now, because the fact of the matter is, with all due respect, I'm just saying to you, you can't take a mitzvah in the Torah and abrogate it because the person already violated it. Or they're in a state of violation, you can't get out of it. So therefore, to say the Ravid meant that, I can tell you, I've gone through the truest, all of them tormented, how can this gadol say a thing like this? So the only thing they were able to do to tone it down a little bit, because they felt it's either a misprint, is to say he was mechalek between the Einish and between the Chalosh Shem Yisr itself. That's the way they wanted to upgrade a little bit. It shouldn't be totally out of context.
But those people who hold like the Raivad suggest that a Kohen can go to Beis HaKoros.
What? Those who literally interpreted the Raivad on the level you're talking about? The Easter doesn't exist anymore by them. If you interpret it literally. That's what he wanted to point out. If I take him literally, it means as if Bezmanazet it doesn't exist.
And it would apply to Bogel.
Everything applies to everything across the board. Yeah.
So if a doctor, if a potential doctor calling,
yeah,
could get away without dissection,
yeah,
and graduate.
So I'll tell you a story, very simple story, Rabbi Isai. I wasn't planning to do this, but I see that you're so fascinated with it. I know personally a dean of a very prestigious medical school today. That the fact of the matter is, he's not a Kohen. But he knew he wasn't going to go into surgery. He knew that he wasn't going to be involved in nituchim. So he had a brilliant mind. The way he learned anatomy and got A pluses is every anatomical section now has a DVD or some type of video in the library. He had a brilliant mind. He saw all the dissections. He memorized the body parts. That's the Iker. And he scored as if basically he was in a laboratory. The professor couldn't care. But he just happened to have another friend, a Chavrusa, who was a Kayah, who was a Frumah, And he wanted to be a doctor the worst way, but he wasn't going to be machala. So he learned b'chavrusa in the library, you know, their anatomy acceptance. That's how he got around, you know. But I'm saying to you, this guy who was not the kayin was so knowledgeable in medicine. He wrote textbooks on medicine. He's the dean of a medical school. So, you know, when it comes to medical education, don't think things for granted. You know, this guy got it from...
There's a movement from Brooklyn.
Yeah, I can see. But I can tell you one thing, my friend. You don't want a surgeon who learned surgery by being a virtual surgeon. That you don't want to have.
I'm not suggesting he could practice surgery, yeah, yeah. But he could practice internal medicine.
But you don't want to have the surgeon practice on you the first real...
I'm not suggesting that the Cohen should be a surgeon, but he could be an internist and a neurologist.
Listen, if he wanted to really be, he could be a robotic surgeon and do the surgery 6,000 miles away. I mean, the people like that also. But let's get back to this. I don't want to spend 5 minutes. So you look back to page number 2. So Rav Tukachinsky gave... Hello? Rav Tukachinsky over here gave a specific psak that if somehow you're a rofe and you're a kohen, how you did it, I don't know, he says, but if you did that, he gives basically two major kulos over here. On page number 2 again, going back to the halacha dalit. So the Rav Tukachinsky says over here that if you're a rofe and you're a kohen, so number 1 is, if he has to perform a amputation of a leg and a foot, and when he does that, he's going to cause an Eivim and a Chai, and the question of Tumas Lames. Since it's a Pekuach Nefesh, he has a right to do that. And as soon as he does it, just get out of the room. You shouldn't continue Matami yourself. The second Kula he paskins is a Gemara we had in Masechtas Nazir about going into a room where a person is a Goses, a moribund patient, who is going to die within the next, you know, 24 to 72 hours. The Gemara was Mechadish, if you remember the Sugya is in Nazir, that even though there's no Isa deraisa mitzad of Lo Yitame being violated, but the Gemara says there's a special Isa of Lo Yechalel, you're putting yourself in a potential Chila mode. The Gemara calls this as a special lab. So it seems that the Gedolim paskin that over here. So they say very simply, yeah, that if you have a Goses, the Kohen could go in if he's a doctor and take care, but as soon as you get wind of the fact he's about to expire, you got to leave the room. He then says another Chiddush later on. What happens if you're the only doctor around and the person expired, and the fact is, legally speaking, you can't get that patient out of the hospital to Kikwin Kavura unless you sign off? So he says if you're the only doctor to sign off, it becomes a Meis Mitzvah, and the Hetta, we had a Meis Mitzvah, the Gemara therefore kicks in to allow you to sign it and then get out. So that's another Chiddush that the Gedolim bring down. Yeah. When they start running, Rabbi, you said they start throwing the end of the kulas there. Now, let us continue. Another important factor. If you look on page 2 on the left-hand side of the page, the concept of an OL being the Tame when it comes to Mesim. So what I want to mention tonight is another important factor. OL doesn't just mean you and the mess are in a room like this in a closed house. But let me give you the following scenario many people are not careful with. You go to a funeral chapel. So as a kohen, you're not going to go. You're going to stand outside. But many people stand outside at the door from which they're going to take the mess out outside. So they figure I'm outside. I'm not inside. But the problem is sometimes there's an overhang awning at the Pesach of the exit. And what happens is, Sof Tumah Latzeis, according to many, is a din of deraisa. So even if the doors are not open yet, if you're going to take the mess out of that Pesach, so the Tumah Semes inside goes out of that Pesach, goes under the overhang, so you're standing outside thinking you're Nitzel from Tumah Semes. So Tikachitsky says, be very careful when it comes to overhangs, what's overhanging over there, because you think you're being Matzli yourself, you're not being Matzli yourself. Turn to page number 3. The next thing I want to mention to you, Rabbi Yisai, before we get to the nitty-gritty of certain technicals tonight, is the concept on page number 3 on the left-hand side of the page, Meis Nochri. This is part of the preparation for the rest of tonight. We paskin, as he brings down, that the Rambam and the Tur Shulchan Aruch paskin like Rav Shimon ben Yochai, that the din of Tumas Oil applies to Jews, it doesn't apply to Goyim. Goy is metabe b'bad v'masa. When it comes to a Goy, he's not metabe b'teres oil. That's Shimon Yochai's opinion. In fact, it is a machlekes tanoim. So the way Rav Tukachinsky formulates it, he says that even though we seem to pass in that way, Shemes nacha in a tab oil, and therefore kivrei nachum are not matamak. Theoretically, I can walk through a goyish cemetery and not be violating anything. Nevertheless, Amru, he quotes the Shulchan Aruch, nachin l'kayin l'ha'al ha'azana ha'alecha kivrei nachim. There is a Ramah quoting a sheet amongst Ashkenazic poskim machmirim. Don't take that cool if you can positively avoid it. And therefore, if that's the case, we see that there's a yesh omrim, that if you could possibly avoid even oil hames of enough, you should not die sushat. Those specific individuals, but obviously, you want to pass them ikadin, like the Shulchan Aruch, therefore don't feel threatened when it comes to tumas oil of a guy. Why is this important? Because Rav Moshe has another famous tshuva which I want to put up front, and that is, can a kohen perform bikur cholim in a hospital? Now, over there, we're not worried about the kohen being magid b'mas in the hospital, but if people die, there's a question of oil hametz. And if the various corridors and rooms are not basically cut off from each other, like doing some hospitals in Eretz Israel, the tumor goes from corridor across the entire corridor, you could have a poor kohen thinking that he's safe, not realizing that a couple of doors down, he got a problem. So the question was posed, can a kohen do bikur cholim? A very famous tshuva, Rav Moshe, a very short tshuva. Rav Moshe basically passes over here, you'll see why I'm mentioning this at this point, is the following. Rav Moshe says, in his halachic opinion, he says the following kula. He says, when it comes to bikur cholim in a hospital, he says, most hospitals in Golos, ruba de ruba, have non-Jewish clientele. And he relies upon the shita, lichatchila, that a guy is matami magamas and not matami b'tumas ayos. Even though Ramah mentions the zahiris, the minig of Klal Yisrael is to rely upon the fact magamas to the exclusion of awel. If that's the case, he says, unless you have knowledge otherwise, since ruba de ruba, the patients in the Goyish hospitals are goyim, and therefore ruba de ruba, if anybody died, most probably it's a guy who died. So if that's the case, you can sign up upon rov to allow yourself to enter. And he says over here, I'm not talking about a Kohen who has to have medical treatment, has to have an operation. He doesn't have to worry about tumas oil. He goes in, and he does what he got to do. So the fact of the matter, I'm talking about a person who's doing bikur cholim. So the lashon of Rav Moshe over here is the following. He says, if that's the case, medina, he says, you can go according to rov, shem nachrim, and therefore, shem etama ba'olal, mikahadin. Therefore, it's a god of lahatu lakon levaka chayla kerovo. Therefore, the mevaka chayla who's your karov, cause Sarah hagadol, cause the patients and Sarah, if you don't come to visit, father, son, shalom ishpacha, or for instance, your wife is sick in the hospital, that surely inyan of shalom bayis akadayma and you're concerned. So for these reasons, he will allow a kohen to mevaka chayla, etc., because you rely upon rov. However, that's in goyish hospital. When you're in a Jewish hospital, where chatzi or maybe rov, there you have to make sure they have special precautions for you. You just can't take it for granted. And there it's all I can tell you, in many of the hospitals, they've made accommodations to take care of the kohen. And by now, it used to be only certain hospitals do this today. But obviously, they've expanded it. They have, therefore, a certain cutoff between sections, that if a person dies, he's in a cutoff section where the rest of the corridors and the rooms are not going to be nogeya when it comes to that. And what's cutting it off is not a doorway of sof tumah, let's say. So therefore, they figured out a whole system to basically segregate it.
But Shari said that there was a sign, Usher, Lekohen, the Kanei.
Yeah, because they have it cut out the districts. But what I point out to you is, therefore, where Moshe's relying on lechatchila, that a guy is not matamah b'tumas ayol to allow bikur cholim to take place. Just to be aware, there might be a chumrah, where Moshe says, for shalom bayis, a kedoymer, he allows that to take place. Now, the next thing I want to show, let's continue over here, Rabbi, so I have a lot to do tonight. The next thing I want to show you, you turn to the next page, on page number 4. On the right-hand side of the page, he says, those who want to paskin, kivrei tzadikim ein matamim, he says, guess what? People tried to push this through. The earlier ones, the Gedolim would say it. What are you talking about? And therefore, if that's the case, you can't use the head to go on a Kevish al Tzadik, the Matame, whether you like it or not. He then brings down on the right-hand side the fact that even a child, a Kohen Katan Zachar, the halach is based upon the Gemara Yevamos and the Rambam and other places to prevent this child from undergoing any tumah if you possibly can. He brings down a woman who's pregnant, who might have a pregnancy with a boy inside, Kayan, is we basically allow her to go into an oil mess. unless you know for a fact she definitely is going to have a boy where it seems to imply over here, he would not allow that cool if he possibly can avoid it. On the left-hand side of the page, Rabbis, we're now coming to...
Yes or no?
What? If you don't know what the baby is, you can rely upon a certain sex fake and she can go without a problem.
Yeah.
Nowadays you know.
What? He implies, if you read this carefully, you can take it back later on, you'll see it's me. If you know Bavadi, she's pregnant with a boy, and today you can know that. 1, 2, 3.
Is that called Tumah inside?
It's called Tumah Balui, you're talking about. Tumah Balui. So the fact of the matter is, some say Tumah Balui is the Tumah's inside and you're outside. But some say it's the reverse, that's not Tumah Balua. But I'm not going to get into that. You're going to keep this and you'll look at it carefully later on. I want to get to the Iker topics tonight. And that is this topic. On page 4 on the left-hand side, this is the major topic, Rabbi Yisai. Let me give you a little hagdama to this, because when you hear what I'm going to mention now, many people never heard this before. Those who learned Masechtas Nazir, you know what I'm going to be saying. Those who didn't learn Masechtas Nazir, listen to what I have to say now. The Gemara says, when it comes to Tumas Kohanim, we already read the Pesukim in Parshas Amar that says that a Kohen is not only allowed, but Mechuyev to Matame to a Shiva Kareivim. The Gemara has a Medrash Halacha in Masechtas Nazir and Daf Mem Gimel. Kishu Shalom Velo Kishu Chaser. You Matame to a mess, your Karev, when he's Shalom, but not if he's missing a body part. Now, what in the world does that mean? So let me just give you a little sampling of the Machlekes, because how you pass it over here is a hot topic. According to Rabbi Yechiel, one of the German Bali Tesis, he says there has to be an Avash and Hashama Tuliyubo, that type of level, in order for this to be applicable. That's his opinion. The Kalba, who was a Talmud of the Maram in Rittenberg, also the German community, says even Etzim Kisa'ira would therefore be a problem when it comes to this halacha. That's a tremendous chumrah in the other direction. That's one machlekes. The next machlekes, a person dies by being killed. Are you by definition called a chaser? There is a sheet amongst Rishonim, and the Kalbah quotes it, that if you die by being murdered, you're called a chaser. Why, we'll see very shortly. The saving grace is the next sheet, the Ramban. The Ramban in this Torah says, Nachmanides. The Ramban says, I'm going to quote him verbatim. He says, the only time there's a shela, if the body part is taken out and the chaserin takes place at the time of death or after death. The Ramban says, any chaserin of surgeries that took out organs when you're alive is not considered a chesaron, and therefore Lach Lamasa does not violate this. Whatever is taken out at the time of death or post-death is the shale, which is a tremendous kula, a tremendous kula. Now, and the Gedolim who pass the kula over here rely very heavily on the Ramban. The next thing I want to mention to you in the Shittas over here is that the Kalbay disagrees, and he says even if it's taken away Michayim, it's also chesaron in Shulchan Aruch. What? I mean, yeah, so, but I'm saying there's in 2 days in Shulchan Aruch, it's a machlokes between the Ramban and the Kalbay, whether or not what was taken out b'chayim is a chesaron, 2 days in Shulchan Aruch. Comes along the Radvaz, and the Radvaz says, with all due respect, Rav David ben Zimra, to the Kalbay, I have one big kasha. Remember the Sugis? The Sugis said, what's an example of this? A person's father's head was decapitated, never he met Isis. So that's an example of chesaron. So even though the head might still be there, but since it's not connected to the body, so fret to the Radvaz. If you were correct that even Michayim, why talk about decapitation? Talk about somebody's finger was chopped off, the foot was taken off. The Gemara seems to imply only on the level of severance of head ukedaima, which causes Misa. The Gemara's example seemed to mitigate against the Kalba, which is an important factor. That's why when it comes to Psak Halacha, the Kalba's Chum is basically rejected by most of the poskim. The Maram Shik, the Chaf Sam Sveikis Talmud, Ram Shik, has an important kula. He says as far as he's concerned, he says the Chesaron has to be Nikir Le'enayim. It has to be observable from outside the body. Like basically a foot is taken away, or a hand's taken off. However, a chesaron of an organ being taken out, that's bifnim, inside the body, and you can't see it missing from outside because the body's been sewed up with a gemer, that never was considered a chesaron and doesn't apply. So according to him, there's no nafkamina, whether it's when you're alive or you're dead. If it's something in the body itself that's not visible by the surface, it doesn't apply. That's a tremendous leniency, Rabbi, you see. Therefore, that answers Tzvi, that answers your appendix question. And so anything that's an internal abstraction, gallbladder, could be a gemer. So that's his specific opinion. What's interesting in the Shulchan Aruch basically vacillates between them. But let me show you the psak of Rav Tikhachinsky. After you heard all these shitas, so says Rav Tikhachinsky on page number 4, besides saying that Kabaravizit is a chov to Matami Lekrovin, he then says in Halacha Beis, Im chaset echem evarish ames, if the mess is missing one of his organs, bein shenechsa b'shasa misa, bein la'acha misa. So obviously, who was he holding like? Like the Ramban. Okay? Ein ha'koyim etamilov, so it's only misa and post-misa. Afilim osa eva ha'chasa munich etzalov, even if it's still there. Kevin shaguf mefurach, ein ha'shalom, ein etamilov. So that's what he basically paskins. What's interesting is, he doesn't seem to be making himself any chiluf between whether it's visible from outside or inside. So he brings that over here that if there was a certain Eva Mechayim, there's a Yesh Omim, the Halach Lamasa, the fact of the matter is Oshim Shematame Love, that you can be Metame. So an chasar mechayim is not a problem, which is basically what the Ramban said. At the end of the day, when Rav Moshe has the question posed to him, Rav Moshe has two tshuvas on this topic. One, a person who had a surgical procedure when he's alive. And the second shayla, a person who had to have, whether he liked it or not, an autopsy, who could obviously has a visible sewing up of his body after they did the nituach. So the question was posed to him, if you're a Kohenim, can I be metamic? These are two practical shaylas. And what Rav Moshe answers to this is the following. When it comes to a person who had this Michayim, and now he died, so Rav Moshe, unquestionably, in his Mahalech, points out that really he's relying heavily on the Ramban, where the Ramban says, quite obviously, metamic l'chasa b'chayim, even b'chasa b'chutz, because the Ramban says two kulas. It was taken out during a lifetime. And number two, it's even visible, it's not a problem. So he's relying very heavily on that specific leniency. He says, even though, however, quite obviously, Mi'ika didn't, that's the way I think we pask him, he nevertheless says that if, quite obviously, it was Mechayim and it was Tamim Beguf, he feel more comfortable with it, but the Ramban is big enough to rely upon him. Many could go to the pasuk like the Ramban. So visibly, that phenomenon, Rabbi Yisai, he's pretty. And if Rabbi Yisai, it's Mechayim Bifnim, he surely has no problem. So therefore, any gallbladder or kidneys or whatever you take out, Mechayim, according to him, is surely permissible. The bigger question he has is, what about people who have, because Adina Mechasidina, there's a law on the books. If you are insured by a life insurance company and you have double jeopardy, whatever it is, I can tell you, based upon first-hand knowledge of cases that I had, they're not going to allow this body to be released from the medical examiner until some minimal type of autopsy is done to verify the cause of death. We once had in Stern College about 20, 30 years ago, a girl who was an epileptic. And she fell and collapsed in the shower. Unfortunately, her body closed the drain, and she drowned because of that. I still remember like yesterday. You can't imagine the hundreds of girls in that dormitory, they're freaking out. I remember we had the medical examiner there, and we fought with every possible kayach while you had to try to prevent an autopsy, but they said whether you like it or not, there is a life insurance policy over here, and therefore the law requires we have to do at least a certain minimal type of autopsy to define. So what they allowed us to do is to have a person who's going to be a chaplain to go into the medical examiners, to be Oymed al-Gabov to make sure that the bare minimal is done, not to cause a random nibble hames. And kach dahav, I still remember the guy who volunteered. He never got over that volunteering, but I still remember the case. So I'm pointing out to you, if that's the case, this karav there, let's say, had that type of situation. They did a minimal nituch hamesim. And there's no question, what? Not that this was a girl, but I'm just saying, but just as a bira hadavar, I'm just saying that sometimes you can't avoid whether you like it or not. So therefore, the shayla was there to Rav Moshe, if I had such a case, what do I do? So Rav Moshe says something very interesting. He says, why is it that they said if you're a haruk, that you can't be metame? Because most probably when you normally kill, when you're haruk, the person didn't do it with a delicate way. Isis, when they kill you, doesn't care how much they cut and how big it is. So therefore, there's probably a chesaron on your guf caused by a lethal murder. But he says, and therefore, it's a chesaron, mis lacha misa. But when you go to doctors who are going to basically cut you open, do what they got to do, and then close you up, they're very careful not to cut more than they have to. They're very careful when they sew you back to try to make it as bakavadik as possible. So he claims, since at the end there's no chesaron of the goof, there might be stitches, but there's no chesaron of the goof, he wants to pass in the kula. We wouldn't do the harig over there, and we'll pass in the kula. And Moshe therefore gives them a dispensation, a big kula, to therefore say that's not the harig case, and therefore allows this person, was the kohen to metamilai, this is an important kula Moshe gave when it came to this specific topic. Now, let's go back to the inside. So therefore, we see over here the different opinions when it comes to that specific part of the topic. Turn the page to page number 5, Rabbi Yisrael. Page number 5. On the left-hand side, the Rabbi Kaczynski talks about the question of whether or not a Kohen who's Matamil HaKrovav, can he Matamil to other Mesim at the time he's Matamil HaKrovav? For instance, you want to do Shmira on your mess, you're a Kohen, but there are other dead people around. No. Can you do Shmira? So this is based upon a major Chakira you have, Rabbi. So when it comes to the din of Tumas HaMess, basically speaking, when it comes to a Kohen being Dov Isa, Tumas Kohenim, is that Hutra Dechuya, the whole Machlokes you have in other places. So if it's Hutra, it's one thing, because it's basically as if the other doesn't exist. But if it's a dechuya, you therefore can't be docha other isurim, you have a head to be docha the mess, so it depends upon that machlokas poskim. What he does bring down, therefore, in cases where you can't avoid not being there, to be metapol, that's one thing. But once you come to a basic pharos, the minik amongst kohanim is to bury in the perimeters, not to bury in the middle, because it's one thing to bring the mess into the basic pharos. So you have the head to bring it in to be bound in the burial. But once the person is in the ground, how do you get out of there without violating these? So the meaning was that Kohen, even to this day, to try to put him at the outskirts to prevent that from taking place. And this is what he points out is the meaning in Klaus. If you can basically do that, you try to do that as much as you possibly can. If you turn to page 6, Rabbi Yisai, one more part before we get to the other major topic tonight, is the concept of Meis Mitzvah. We had it in the Sefer Nazir, the Gemara in Brachos has it, a Kohen is chayav to matamei to a mes mitzvah she'ein lo kovrim. We pass in that way. But let me show you something interesting, Rabbi Yisai. Halacha beis. Ubemeis mitzvah chayav to matamei gan umatzu chaser. I mentioned this before. That since it's a mes mitzvah, even if it's a chaser, the concept kula lo miksasu doesn't apply in that case. So therefore, that takes care of that specific problem. And also, once you matamei to the mess and you bury the robe of the body, if you find the miyut, I can continue the tomb of the Gemara said in Nazir. We pass on that as well. Now, halacha gimel. What happens if I can't find other people to bury the mess except with tremendous schar? It's then considered a meis mitzvah, and I can do it myself. That's a tremendous kula. And then he says, in matzal kovrim nachrim, afilu bechinam. The Gemara had a case, they found a dead body in a non-Jewish area with a bunch of gangsters, if you remember the Gemara in Nazir. So the question was, is this a meis mitzvah or not? So he paskins. In matzal lo kovrim nachrim, afilu bechinam. Mash no lashin apayiskim. Shekozman she'en lo kovrim yisraelim. The person is considered a meis mitzvah. Not to the top level, the guy you have, and you're the Jew instead, you're still considered a meis mitzvah, and you have a right to do such. And he says, when it comes to Mes Mitzvah, the fact is, what alleviates you, if you have enough people to take your place. If you're needed, because there's need four people to bury, and only three, you still consider the Mes Mitzvah, you can move top all. Those are important coolers. But I want to come to the major topic tonight. The major topic tonight, Rabbi Yisai, is major halacha lamasa. And that is the question of Kohenim going on planes, with the two shaylas raised in Poskim. Question number one, can you go on a plane where there's a mess in the storage department below? That's question number one. Question number two, there are no mesim on the plane, but if I know the plane's going to fly in a direction of a route, that there are cemeteries below, since Tumah Ritzutza of a kever is Bokeva Ad Harakia, so you're going to go through the airspace of a base kveris below, do we have to be concerned? Do we have to be worried? When planes are going over Europe to come to Eretz Israel, the plenty of cemeteries they basically go over. I can't tell the Kohen, take your parachutes and jump out of here. So what do we do? Is there a Shayla? So these two Shaylas were raised. I want to share with you tonight the resolutions, which I also find a very, very fascinating topic. Now, the first thing I want to mention, Rabbi Yisrael.
Don't have to go too far.
What?
You right here, Elmont, Beth David Cemetery, every 45 seconds, there's a plane flying directly.
Yeah, yeah. So this brings me to, I'll give you an episode in Eretz Israel where this is Nogeo Halacha Lamasa. First, let me just explain what the problem is. So you'll say to me, but I'm contained in a plane, and the plane is a self-contained area, and therefore it's like an Oral Zarek. You know, so is an Oral Zarek, how do we pass him? Is an Oral Zarek a flying OL? Is it Chaitz of Netuma? Now we had it in the Gemara. So let me just mention something, Rabbi Yisai, because I have that as the last page in Gemara Mekamos. If you want to look at the Gemara, the Gemara had over there, listen carefully, two versions of Rabbi Yossi Bar Rabbi Yehuda. One version was, an Oral Zarek is not matzel from Tuma, and therefore you're tough luck. You can't use that as a way of entering Eretz Amin, which is only Tuma Derabban, and let alone a place with a Shem of Tuma Deraisa. There was another opinion of Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda that an Oral Zarek, in fact, does work. If you remember, the Rush asks a question, because the Gemara seems to pose this as a contradiction, and the Rush says there's no contradiction. Why? Because it depends upon what Oral Zarek you're talking about. And to dramatize this to you, instead of, because I know I have limited time, I'm going to quote you a Rambam. The Rambam paskins the following. The Rambam paskins in Hilmus Tumas Emes the following. Hanichnas le'eretz ha'amin, b'shita teva migdal, ha'porchim ba'avir. It's flying through the sky. He's talking, because Oyel Zarek is not chaitzitz. That's the Rambam in Hilchus Tumas Emes. The Rambam in Hilchus Paraduma has the following psak. This you'll also remember because we had this in many sugis already. When it came to Paraduma, they had certain kulos, but they also had chumers. One chumer was, there was a special place in Yerushalayim where women gave birth because they wanted the kids who were going to fetch the water to be Kaddish Vatahar. So there was a certain place where they were born. There was no way there was any tomb in the ground. When the kids had to fetch the water, so the Rambam describes there was a bridge. And this bridge, the kids were put on fat oxen. And on the backs of the oxen, you had these wooden boards. So if Tama, when they went over the bridge, there happens to be a keva below, so between the girth of the animal and between the boards extending, these kids would not be subject to any type of tuma, and therefore that's the way you kept the kids tahar. So the question everybody asks on the Rambam, if you call oil zarek, is not considered an oil, and oil zarek doesn't mean initially it's flying through the air, it means it's mobile rather than being stationary. Oil usually means a stationary makam. Once it's moving and it's in movement, then halacha lamasa, that should be a zarek. So how can you pass in Hilchus Paraduma an oil zarek is an oil, and why in Hilchus Tumas Emes you say it's not? So one of the tirutzim that they give is based upon the Rosh in Masechtas Nazir. The Nazir, the Rosh says, when is an oil zarek not an oil? If it's flying through the air and totally disconnected from the ground. And that was the first brayso. He's throwing things up in the air. Since that's so dissimilar from a physical structure on the ground, that's out of the picture. But when you are walking with a person in some type of sedan chair, and you carry him, like one of the cases in the Gemara, you're walking on the ground, human beings, your feet, and you're carrying the guy above in the sheet that they're magdol, or the animals have it on their back. Since the feet of the human beings are stationary on the ground, or the animal, even though it's a movement, but it's still connected to the ground, they want to say that's not the oil zarek, that's solely dissimilar from the din of oil, and therefore in that case it would be considered oil and is matzel. Once you accept that rush, the Rambam is no longer a problem, because the Rambam was makbid. What oil is not matzel? It's parech bi'avir. Yeah, but that which is physically on the ground, like an automobile or a wagon, where it's physically on the ground, that could be theoretically an oil, zaruk, that is halachically accepted. Lubavitch accepts that. Lubavitch allows their chassidim to drive up in cars up to the kever, because they claim the car's physical body is an oil zarek that's moving on the ground, and therefore, if that's the case, you have the heter of the Rambam and Hilchus Paraduma to be the matir. So some posts can pass in that way. So that's one.
The exact opposite.
What?
There's a
Tosfos in, I know, but I'm telling you what the Rush says and what they basically accept. But there's another phenomenon, and that is a very famous kasha that was posed to the Noda Behuda. The Noda was asked that it seems that there was a Rav in Europe who paskined that there's no problem for a person in an Erev to open up an umbrella to walk with the umbrella on Shabbos. It's not an Erev problem, it's a question, is this making an Ayah? So what did this Rav say? The Rav told the person, the Bala Bas, I'm going to pass it from the din of Oil Zaruk that this hastenish Kainawa. Because the Gemara is an Oil Zaruk, and he wouldn't make the chiluk what I just made before. So you're walking with the umbrella, it's an Oil Zaruk, and if that's the case, this oil is a movable, therefore, opening the umbrella should not even be a violation of Isa the Rabban, and that's what the Rav wanted to pass it. And therefore, if that's the case, if you hold Oil Zaruk over here, it's not here by Tumah, it doesn't apply to Shabbos. So Zabta Benoda Behuda, a very lambda shadray with the finger. This is comes. You'll see how this applies tonight. He says there's a big difference between an oil hazorik that's chaitzis b'fnei tumah, and between an oil zorik that's maybe tumah to everybody underneath it. The same oil zorik that's flying in the air over a tumas mess in an oil shatumah, if it's moving, it's not a chaitzis, and therefore that's why the Gemara says it's not matzil. But that's an oil zorik in the context of not being a chaitzis. If you're an oil zorik, well, you're not going to be chaitzis, but let's say the oil zorik has in it, it's flying in the air, a piece of a mess and a targeted person. You're self-contained in an oil zorik. The oil zorik is maybe tumah, so the fact you're contained in an oil zorik does not take away the tumah, because it might not be chaitzis, but it is maybe tumah. That's his chiddush. So therefore he says if that's the case, the oil zorik in the Maran was dealing with the concept of chatzitza. We pass it as chaitz v'nei tumah. The halach in Shabbos is the oil you are erecting, is the people or things contained under this oil, can oil basically bring them together to maybe tumah? She says 100% it will. Therefore, holding an umbrella, since it's maybe tumah underneath it, and there might be a little piece of mess, and you're standing, the umbrella's there, the umbrella's enough of an umbrella, is enough of an oil to be maybe tumah. So if it's, that's the case, for Shabbos has a sin of a din of an oil, and you have a halachic problem. But he doesn't use that. He doesn't use it. The only question that was he then said to himself is, so the Easter is basically speaking, he says, opening it, creating it, and walking with it. So he asked the question, what if I already have a pre-open umbrella from before Shabbos, and I'm just going to pick it up and hold it over my head, I shouldn't be geblitzed with the rain. So he says, technically speaking, mi'ikadin, you haven't violated anything, it's a Maris Ayin problem, but not me, because that's basically the famous Noda Behuda. Now why am I mentioning this? Because I want it's a Maris Ayin, because people think you might have opened it up. People might think, Maisha, people might think you opened it up, and that's the Maris Ayin.
That's a Maris
Ayin. What?
Maris Ayin isn't Lashahovah generally, it's Lavo.
People will be Choshed, that's how it came into, that's what it is. That's what it is. Now, Rabbi Yisai, let's go Vaita. Aeroplanes.
What? The ceiling of the oil is not a dollar that's for carbon toxin. Then there's no oil.
I'm going to get to that right
so
now.
That's an umbrella.
No,
would be the same.
No. The umbrella, the fact of the matter is, that's a question in being chotzets. That's not a question in serving as an inclusion. It's a din of chatzitza as the kibbi makabel tumah, not to serve as a maybe. But let me go back to the ikka shela. Rabbi Yisai riding in an airplane. So riding in an airplane. Riding and flying an airplane, correct? So the airplane itself, it's surely an oil zarek l'chovashitis. So therefore, hovering over a base of kfavis below is a shela, because we assume most mason are buried in such a way to tumer etzutza bokev oila. So if you fly over Geisha cemeteries, nothing to talk about. The shela is Jewish cemeteries. Since the plane is made from a metal material, or such, that is makabel tumah, it surely can't be chosel b'nei tumah. So therefore, for that specific reason, they point out you have to be careful and find out what the flight route is. Now, most planes, if they're going to pass over cemeteries and you don't know, most of the cemeteries are Geisha cemetery, you don't have to be concerned. But if you know the flight plane as such, that it's going to go over a Jewish cemetery, then you got a problem. And they quote a famous case of El Al. Many, many years ago, El Al was repairing one of its runways. So the runway from east to west was operative, from south to north was not. The problem is, the eastern part of the runway, if you took off from it, you went over the Cholon Cemetery. So therefore, Cohen were told that only certain times of the day when they take off to the west rather than to the east, can you basically put a flight, even though there's no mess on the plane, but the flight routes will then determine exactly when and where and how you can use this plane. So the same thing would apply to me. If you know the flight is going over a Jewish cemetery, you got a problem. If it's over a Gaia cemetery, you can ignore the problem. That's question number one. Question number two, and this is the more the mahatter question, forget about kvarim, you have a mess in the airplane. Now statistically, the statistics are that LL planes in the winter, 80% of the time there's a mess aboard. During the summertime, it's 60%. That's number one. Number two, the second problem is that if you will call and ask LL if there's a mess on the plane, many of them don't know the answer until an hour or two before. That's problem number two. Problem number three, since LL doesn't want cancellations, or Abraham says, who says you can believe what they tell you? Because they don't want people to cancel. I said, there might be a mess, but they're not going to tell you information anyway. So that's problem number three. So therefore, the question was, what's Tutman? So you're right. I know some Kohenim over here. Delta. Rabbi Bloom told me he flies Delta because Delta doesn't take Mason upon.
They started taking Mason.
Well, if they do, then you better tell Rabbi Bloom that because he thinks they...
What about flying from Eretz Yisrael to the United States?
It depends upon...
They don't have Mason coming.
No, that's not true. There are people dying in Eretz Yisrael who brought back to America. I can tell you cases. Meister Shehoya.
Is there a post to have on the plane?
Listen, I'm going to get to that now. Rabbi Yisai, you'll see in 5 minutes, because you got to die in Meyer soon, the answer to all these... Just let me just finish my presentation. What?
Newark is no Mason.
That's another possibility, at least so far. Now... Listen carefully. So the fact of the matter is, so the first question was posed, what's the problem? Don't you have a hafsaka between the deck where you are and the mess below? So the first problem is the deck hepsik is a piece of metal. Metal is not mafsik, Rabbi Yisrael. So that was the problem. So then they did the flying carpet lumbus. Maybe because it's a flying carpet, so therefore that's, and they wanted to bring a riot to that hector, from a psak which was issued by Rav Pesach Frank and Rav Diskin in a case of a poor guy who had a wagon, and part of his trip with the wagon was over basic forest, and there was a problem of oil. So the eitz that they said is take a piece of plywood, shoot the clay eitz, attach that permanently to the bottom. That's not makabel tumah, and therefore that was serve of the hafsaka. So they wanted to say, if that's the case, why shouldn't the carpet be considered not makabel tumah and serve a hafsaka? So the answer given by Rav Arbach and others to basically jettison that was that a piece of wood has its own physical essence and being and stands as an essence, as a piece of border, you know, a barrier itself. That maybe you can give the heter to. But the carpet follows the contour of the metal floor. It's basically bottled to the metal floor. And if the metal floor can be mafsik, the carpet ain't good. So the flying carpet sheet was rejected. Comes along the Institute of Halacha or Halperin, and he says, I have a better answer. The better answer is, listen carefully, Rabbi, I'm coming to the conclusion. The better answer is that it's true that the Aramis, they're not careful to make sure there's a tefik hepsik between the top of the mess and the kokos. If there was a hepsik tefik in between, that's mafsik, but there's also one tonight. There has to be a hole on the side of tefik, otherwise it's a kevasasa. So it has to have a tefik above the body inside, and the side has to be a little tefik on the side, either it's a shell of kevasasa. So his institute said, what we're going to do is, we're going to take an aram, it's totally closed, and we're going to create a box from a material that's not makabel tumah. The box will be created that inevitably, once you put the cover and the walls on, it'll surely be more than a tefech above. And there'll be a little cutout on the side to have a pseach tefech. That should contain the tumah. There should be no problem. So many, many people rely upon that today. Allah invested in thousands and thousands of these to keep the business going. Some gedolim were not happy with it. Some gedolim accepted, but some rely upon that heter. Then there was, basically speaking, another lumdis, and that lumdis was, and this is, if you Google this tonight, you won't believe me, there are some people who were told that if you are encapsulated with plastic bubble around your entire body, that's a tefet thick, that would be mafsik between you and the mason below. So I have pictures on Google of Kohenim sitting with plastic bubble. The problem is, by the time the trip's over, they might be a mess. That's the problem. They might suffocate. But the fact that was called the bubble. So Ramosha then had the following chakira. Ramosha, one of his tshuvas, said, when it comes to metal being mekabel tumah, it's in Parshas Matos dealing with clay midyan. There are six metals over there, so maybe I can use the svara shnei k'sulavak echad emalamdin. Since the Torah singles out these six metals, maybe only they are matami, nothing else. Therefore, you want to say if that's the case, maybe an aluminum plane or the new materials used today are not mekabel tumah. But he says, in order for me to paskin that kula, I would have to have a couple more chachamim to agree with me. At the end of there, Moshe says, since I don't have anybody else to agree with me, I ain't going to do it. The Chazon Ish also proposed the same exact thing, yet then he basically said, I feel also uncomfortable with it, and basically they basically rejected that. So if that's the case, Rabbi Yisrael, when you think about it, the only way you can go on a plane with a mess is if you have these special containers that Allah uses, or if you don't have that other option, Rabbi Yisrael, to find a plane that is maceless. What? About the So in any event, Rabbi Yisrael, from this we therefore see, Rabbi Yisrael, the same thing would apply. What about going with buses and trains over areas that there might be batik barais? So there, once again, you have the lumdis, you know, if the cemeteries are going over are geisha cemeteries, you don't need to worry about it. But if they're going to basically go over geisha cemeteries, so then the shayla was, what can you basically do when it comes to that? So therefore, once again, the lumdis between that which is running on the ground compared with flying in the sky, if you take that lumdis, since they're riding on the ground rather than flying in the air, and the chiluk of the Rambam, and therefore that's another way of getting around the problem. And there was some gedolim who passed on that kula in Europe. Yes. What? It's an ol zarek, but it's on the ground, and that is mafsik. That's what I'm saying to you. Yes. Doesn't make a difference. Since it's a movement, so obviously you're asking me, is that so? The question over there is, what is the floor made of? You know, and what is the bottom made of? That's where that basically kicks in. Yes, sir.
Good question. Is there a limit on how high the tumah goes? If you're a paying astronaut.
So, no. It says ad rakia. Rakia doesn't mean the lower rakia, it means to outer space, basically speaking. They don't put it on.
No matter how high.
Yeah.
Also, what about time? Like, space, if you have, like, say, a wall of a circle, and you have a tefa. Even if it's not continuous, you have the equivalent of continuity if the space is less than a certain amount. Is there a certain amount of time that it's like plane flies and you're a thousandth of a second over?
That thousandth of a second is a problem.
So time is not like, if it's less. If it's
time ain't going to help you over here. Time ain't going to help you. So if you're an astronaut, you got to make sure when you basically orbit the Earth, you know, whether or not you're going over carbonite.
You might need a bubble.
You need a bubble material. Bubble. That's what the spacesuits are about.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.